For the last few weeks, I've been talking about giving, and we talked about giving to God for the first week, and then giving to the poor last week. And this week, I want to talk about setting up what I call a God's money fund. And this would be for the purpose of what we talked about the last 2 weeks. And then I want to talk about generosity also, which is a different category of giving. I hope to get to that yet today. So when I say a God's money fund, what I mean by that is a separate bank account or a separate share in your bank account or a box or an envelope or something, some place that's set aside specifically and solely for things that the Bible instructs us to give to financially. These would be three main things. That would be the ministry, church needs, and the poor. And all three of those things the Bible commands us to give to. God requires us to give to those things, and therefore those things come out of what we would consider God, what I call God's money, or your tithe, if you want to call it that. Let me just give you some verses to show you that the Bible does teach us to give to all three of these things, and that's why I conclude that this is part of your giving to the Lord. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 14 is the first one. This is a succinct summary of what Paul said for the previous several verses, where he's making the case here where ministers should be paid for their labor. And he gives the example of soldiers, of people keeping the flock, of the Levites in the Old Testament living off the things that were given to the Lord there. And he concludes, and he says, "Even so," so in the same manner, in the same way, "even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel." So preachers, in other words, should live from their work. They should be supported based on the work that they do, and therefore they make their livelihood, in other words, preaching the gospel. Just like, you know, anybody else that you would pay for a service, that's sort of what's happening here. Paul says in another place that he had that they had given unto them spiritual things, and therefore they reap their carnal things. So that's the exchange that the Lord has set up here. In Galatians 6 and verse 6, Paul teaches likewise. There's a number of verses in here. I'm not going to have given them to you before in other studies, but I'm just going to give you three just to establish the point. Galatians 6 and verse 6, "Let him that is taught in the word," so that's you all, that's people that are, that's church members, "let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things." That would be me. To communicate, as I've mentioned before, I'll mention it again because this is a word that has changed meanings over the years. To communicate means to give to another as a partaker, to give a share of, to impart, or confer. So it's not telling you to call your pastor up and talk to him every week. I mean, that's fine. You can do that. But it's not talking, that's not the type of communication that it's referring to here. It's talking about giving. And then one more, 1 Timothy 5, 17 and 18. 1 Timothy 5, 17 and 18. It says, "Let the elders that rule well," now remember in the Bible, elder, bishop, pastor, overseer, steward, right? Those are all titles for the same office. "Let the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honor," and he'll explain to you what he's talking about there by double honor, "especially they who labor in the word and doctrine." So an elder that rules well, and there's, that's the two functions of the elder, or two of the functions, is ruling and teaching. So he's laboring in word and doctrine, and he's ruling well, and those that do that well are worthy of double honor. What is he talking about? Verse 18, "For the scripture saith, thou shalt not muzzle the ox that treadeth out the corn," and the laborer is worthy of his reward. So he's quoting from the Old Testament, Deuteronomy, to prove the point that ministers ought to be paid and compensated for their work. And then he quotes our Lord Jesus Christ from the New Testament when he said the laborer is worthy of his reward. He's quoting there from the book of Luke when Jesus told the disciples to go out and they were to preach, and when they found a place that was inviting for them and they would take them in and hear what they had to say, they were to stay in that place, not go from house to house. And Jesus said, the laborer is worthy of his reward. So they were taken care of. They were supplied for their needs when they were out preaching the gospel. Now, the second thing that we're required to give to from our money that we set aside for the Lord is church needs. There's a principle. This is Old Testament, but this is an excellent principle in the Old Testament that shows this. 2 Kings 12, 4 through 11. As a matter of fact, this example that they set back here is, we follow this when it comes to how we collect money here in our church. 1 Kings 12, 4 through 11. This is back when the house of God, and in those days the house of God was a brick and mortar building, when the house of God needed some repairs, it needed some work done to it, and so they were instructed to start taking up a collection to have this work done, to have the breaches in the house repaired. And then they weren't doing it, so then the priest took matters into his own hands and made it happen. So we'll read about it here. 2 Kings 12, 4 through 11. And Jehoash said to the priests, Jehoash was the king, said to the priest, all the money of the dedicated things that is brought into the house of the Lord, even the money of every one that passeth the account, the money that every man is set at, and all the money that cometh into any man's heart to bring into the house of the Lord, let the priest take it to them, every man of his acquaintance, and let them repair the breaches of the house, wheresoever any breach shall be found. But it was so that in the 23rd year of King Jehoash, the priests had not repaired the breaches of the house. So they just were delinquent in their duties. They weren't doing what they were supposed to. They weren't fixing up the house. Then King Jehoash called for Jehoiada the priest and the other priest and said unto them, why repair ye not the breaches of the house? Now therefore receive no more money of your acquaintance, but deliver it for the breaches of the house. And the priest consented to receive no more money of the people, neither to repair the breaches of the house. But Jehoiada the priest took a chest and bored a hole in the lid of it and set it beside the altar on the right side as one cometh into the house of the Lord, and the priests that kept the door put therein all the money that was brought into the house of the Lord. This is why I say we kind of follow this pattern. He took a box, he bored a hole into it, and interestingly enough, he set it on the right side when you come into the house of the Lord. Now, I didn't do this on purpose, but that box right there sits on the right side as you come into the room, right? Just by coincidence. But anyway, they didn't pass a plate around. Right, that's what most churches do. They pass the plate, and they basically guilt people into giving, and I mean that's what it comes down to, I think. But we don't pass the plate here, and some people I've heard, I haven't actually witnessed this. I don't know how you'd know, but I've heard, you know, they put the little envelope there in the pews so you can put your money in there, so it's a more anonymous. So I've had people tell me that are the ones that count the money, that they'll find envelopes that are empty because people don't want to look like cheapskates or whatever, and they're not giving, so they throw in an empty envelope so it looks like they're giving. So anyway, and then some of them make change in the offering plate if they have a little too much or something. But, no, that's an old redneck joke. But anyway. So they weren't passing the plate around. They just put the box there with a hole in it, and when people gave the money, they just stuck it into the box. And it was so, when they saw that there was much money in the chest, that the king's scribe and the high priest came up, and they put up in bags and told the money that was found in the house of the Lord. They told the money. That means to count. It's kind of funny when Ramsey says, tell your money where to go or tell your money what to do. It's kind of interesting. I guess that's a biblical usage of the word, sort of, in a different way. So they counted it up, basically. And they gave the money, being told, into the hands of them that did the work, that they that had the oversight of the house of the Lord, and they laid it out to the carpenters and builders that wrought upon the house of the Lord. So here's an example of people giving to maintain the house of the Lord. Now this was different from them giving of their first fruits of their crop so that the Levites could eat, right? They were tossing money into the box so that the house of the Lord could be repaired. So this was not supporting the ministers. This is actually supporting the needs of the church itself. We have examples of this also in the New Testament. If you look in 1 Timothy 5, 3 through 4, 1 Timothy 5, 3 through 4, here Paul gives instruction for the care and maintenance of widows that are widows indeed, and he gives a bunch of qualifications in this chapter for that. And I'm just going to read a few verses. Verses 3 and 4. Honor widows that are widows indeed. He's writing to a preacher here who has charge over the house of God. But if any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. So widows are to be honored by the church if they don't have children or family members to take care of them, and if they're 60 years old and only married once, and, you know, various things. Then he goes down in verse 9. He gives some qualifications here that I just mentioned. He says, let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man. So notice he says here, let her not be taken into the number, meaning the number of the widows that the church is supporting. So he's talking about something that the church would be supporting here. The church would be supporting these widows. And then verse 16, he says, of any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them, and let not the church be charged that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. You see, so there are widows that the church should relieve. So this would be, you know, money that would be given to the church, and the church would be distributing this money in the form of food and whatever else, help for the widows. So there are times when it would be right for us to give money to the church fund for the church fund to be used for something. This would be one case like that, taking care of widows. Or also taking up a collection for poor saints, could be in our own church or in another church. And you have an example of this in 1 Corinthians 16, 1 through 3. So this would, again, this would be part of your Lord's money. Whatever money you set aside for the Lord, you know, part of it would go to the preacher. Part of it would go for church needs if there are any. We don't really have any, and haven't had any. But if that was something, then that would be part of it. And then also for the poor, which I'll get to next. 1 Corinthians 16, 1 through 3. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do ye. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. Verse 3, and when I come, whomsoever ye shall approve by your letters, them will I send to bring your liberality unto Jerusalem. So again, this was a collection made. This wasn't individuals individually sending money to help the saints in Jerusalem. They could have done that. But this was actually something that Paul told him, I want you as a church to take up a collection, but every man lay by himself in store. So every man, you all save up the money, and then when I get there, all the money gets pulled, and it gets given to somebody, a representative that takes it to Jerusalem. And I want you saving this up as you go, every week. I don't want to get there and say, okay, where's the money for the saints in Jerusalem? You're like, I left my wallet at home. You know, I don't know. I don't really have any. Let me go check the cushions in the couch or something. No, this was put it aside every week, have it laid up in a fund, right, in your God's money. This is basically their God's money fund. Put this money there every week, and then when this need comes, you've got the money. You can give it to this need. That verse right there is basically the basis of how we do giving in this church. That's the idea. You lay by yourself every time you get paid, and then you give to the Lord's, the needs that the Lord commands, you give out of that fund to those things. and then also the poor in Galatians 2 and verse 10. So this verse here in Corinthians, this was the church helping the poor saints in another church, but then also individually we can help the poor. We are required to, and we can use the Lord's money for this as well. People that are truly poor, as I talked about last Sunday, people that lack the basic necessities of food, clothing, shelter, medical care, those things. Galatians 2 and verse 10, which I read last week, only they would, this is the other apostles, Peter and John, that were sending Paul off. They said, only they would that we should remember the poor, the same which I also was forward to do. So Paul personally would remember the poor. So this is something that we can do personally as well as collectively. And one more in Proverbs 19:17, which I read last Sunday as well, I do believe. It says, he that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again. That's why I say when you give to the poor, you're giving to the Lord. So this is part of the Lord's money that you, when you use to help people that are genuinely, truly poor. Now, I recommend that church members each purpose in their hearts what percentage of their income they're going to give to the Lord, 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 7, and then they lay by themselves that amount, 1 Corinthians 12, 16, 1 through 2, into a separate account or a box every time they get paid or receive money. So let's look at that 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 7. 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 7. Every man, according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give. So you ought to purpose. This means you think about it ahead of time, you determine what you're going to do, and the Bible teaches proportional giving, as I've already said. So you determine ahead of time what percentage of your income you're going to give, you purpose it, and then you do what you purposed. Right? This is not, giving to God is not willy-nilly. It's not whatever I happen to have with me at the time or something like that. It's something you've thought about ahead of time, you've already planned this out, and it's something that you do regularly and consistently. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And one way that you can mitigate grudgeful and necessary giving, if that's how I want to say that, one way you can stop giving grudgingly and of necessity is by purposing in your heart what you're going to give. When you've already purposed it in your heart, and you shave off that amount, you put it in a separate account, and that is God's money, why would you give it grudgingly? It's not yours anymore, right? There should be no grudgingly. Why would you do that? I mean, you may have a question of, is this a good use of the Lord's money? How much should I give? But grudgingly should never come into the picture. Why would you, I don't really want to give, but it's not even your money. What do you care about not giving away? I mean, it's not your money. It's easy to give away other people's money. Congress does it all the time. You think they ever are grudgingly spending your money? Of course not. They don't have a qualm in the world about spending your money because it's not theirs. And you shouldn't have a qualm in the world about spending God's money because it's not yours. You're just the steward of it. So like I said, 1 Corinthians 16, 1 through 2, lay by yourselves in store. You know, every time you get paid, you put that money into the Lord's money. And this is no different than any, or shouldn't be any different than any other area of your life if you budget. You ought to be budgeting, and like I talked about in the budgeting sermon, having sinking funds for your car fund, for your house maintenance fund, for your house savings fund, for your car insurance fund if you pay it every year, every 6 months or whatever, for all kids' college fund, whatever, all kinds of your vacation fund, right? All these things, like I already told you and taught you, you ought to be figuring out, I'm going to put this much per month in each of these funds. I'm going to put it in there. And then when that need comes up, I can use that fund to pay for that need. It's the same way with the Lord's money. This is no different. It's just with the Lord's money, you need to do it. You're commanded to do it. If you're smart, you'll do it with other stuff in your life too. But at least with this, you better do it because God tells you to do it. As for the other stuff, you'd just be wise if you did it. Now, the money in that account or that box or that envelope or whatever, That then becomes God's money. That's what I call it. To be used for supporting the aforesaid things which God requires us to. The ministry, church needs, and the poor. So once it goes into that fund, it should never go back out of that fund, right? It then gets given to the things that God says it needs to be given to. For me, like I said the other day, it never, ever would get spent on anything else, God being my helper. It would never get spent on me because it's not mine anymore. I really consider that. That money in that fund is not mine any more than the money in your bank account is not mine. I would just as soon steal your checkbook, write out a check out of your checkbook for something for myself, than I would take money out of God's money fund and buy something for myself. It's the same thing. It's not my money, right? Now, that's how I look at it. You may choose to look at it differently. You may think one day, you know what? I'd like to go out to eat dinner tonight and I don't have any money. I'll just take some out of the Lord's money. You can go ahead and do that, and I will preach your funeral for you. And I'm sort of kidding, but sort of not. You know what happened to Ananias and Sapphira when they stole from God? He killed them for it. You say, well, I mean, that might not happen to me. We'll try and find out, see what happens. I'm not going to try it, I can tell you that much. I'm not going to, but you want to try it, go ahead, and I'll be here to preach your funeral. This is what I've done since I was converted. That is, setting aside money in God's money fund and then using that to do the things that God tells me to with it. Over 20 years, even before I was converted for a while. Done this for a long time. Now here's something, this is just more of a tactical thing. A friend of mine was telling me the other day that he does this, and I never even thought about it. I don't even know, I think I knew it was a thing, but some companies will allow you to set up multiple direct deposits for your paycheck, and you can deposit part of your paycheck into one account, you can deposit part of your paycheck into another account, and he has his Lord's money deposited directly into a different bank account, goes straight in there, right out of his pay. I thought that was a good idea. It'll save you some time and effort, and if this would have been available to me back in the day, I probably would have done it. I did it another way, and it was all automatic anyway. I think I told you that before. If I got paid on the 15th, on the 16th, I had automatic transfers set up, and it automatically moved it into the other account. So it basically did the same thing. It didn't take me any time or effort or anything like that. But yeah, the direct deposit thing will just, you know, make it simple for you. Just shows up in there. And I've heard people say, well, that's, if you do it that way, then you're not, it's not really, it's like you're not really making a choice to give anymore. The choice has sort of been taken away from you. But my answer to that was, you made the choice way back when. You only needed to make the choice once. I made the choice that it automatically goes here. And then in my case, I just had a check automatically cut to my pastor and mailed it off. I mean, you talk about lazy. Like, I didn't do anything. I didn't move any money anywhere. Automatic transfer happens. And then at the end of the month, a check gets cut to the pastor, automatically mailed to him. I mean, I was as lazy as it gets. And somebody said, well, I mean, is that really, I mean, are you really giving then? I'm like, well, yeah. I made the choice years ago, and the choice still stands. Like, I don't see a problem with that. I mean, so anyway. Now, how each person divides up God's money for the things listed above, that is the ministry, the church, and the poor, that's up to him. You know, so however you decide you want to divide that up, right, that's your choice. I'm not going to tell you how to do that. What I do recommend, and I do this myself, is keeping back a little bit of money every month and letting that accumulate in your God's money account until there's sufficient amount of money there available to meet an emergency or to meet, you know, needs that might come up within the church or in the lives of people, you know, that we know that are in need. So, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not recommending you build up, like, tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars in this account or something like that. But, you know, to have a decent amount of money, whatever you consider that to be, so that you have some money in there that if a need comes up, you can give to that need. And, you know, you got a little bit of extra there. So I do recommend keeping a little bit back, you know, and just letting that build up over time in that account. Like I said, that way if a need arises, then we'll all have some money saved up in our God's money accounts to give. So then we can collectively also give. So you can give individually if you know of a need, right? You can do that yourself. Or if there is a need in the church and I bring it before the church, then we can collectively give to it, put it all together, and then give to that need. And then and everybody can just take it out of their own God's money and they can give whatever they want. And then, of course, we can, you know, you can give to needs out of your own money, too, as well. If you don't have enough money in the Lord's money and something comes up and it's really a need and you want to give to it, you're not limited to whatever you've purposed. You can always give out of your own money. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. It's all the Lord's anyway, as I'll mention here in a minute. Now, I think this is a much better system than giving all of one's tithe, and I'm just using that as a generic term right now. But I think it's a much better system than giving all of one's tithe to the church fund. Because this is what most churches do. Most churches teach that you just, you give your tithe to the church every week or 2 weeks or whatever, every time the plate gets passed around. And then the church will take it and they'll put it in the church bank account, and then the church will determine what gets done with that. And that usually the church means the leadership, the, you know, the board or something like that. And they decide what the pastor gets paid and what the, you know, the building gets, the whatever, if you have a loan on the building, which you shouldn't, or just maintenance on the building, church needs, helping out the poor in the church, whatever. That all gets decided by some group and then distributed. But I think this is a much better system than that. It's anytime that you can keep it closer to individuals, I think it's a better idea. That way you don't have a bunch, you don't have a few people controlling all the money and deciding what happens to it, and I don't think that's a good idea. And furthermore, I can't find a scriptural command nor an example in the New Testament of church members giving all their tithes and offerings to the church to be distributed to the pastor, to church needs, and to the poor. I was just thinking about that, and I can't think of an example of that, where that was done. The only thing that I could think of was in the Jerusalem church. Some people sold their land and they did lay that money at the apostles' feet. They gave that to the church, to the leadership in the church, to be distributed to the poor. But that was not a commandment, and it was not, this was not repeated in other churches either. And as I've mentioned before, this ended up not turning out very well for them, right? They ended up being poor and having other churches helping them. But even so, that was not their regular tithing, right? Some people, when they sold land, they just gave the whole amount, right? This was not a tithe. This was 100%, right? They sold the land, gave it all to the church. Well, so this is a different thing. This was not their regular giving, just all being put into some church, you know, fund or something like that. So I don't see an example of that in the New Testament. If you know of one, tell me about it, but I'm not aware of one. So this is why we have no church box here in this church. We've got the pastor's box back there, but we don't have a church box. And we don't take up an offering for the church on a regular basis, or as a matter of fact, ever, so far. I'm not saying I wouldn't, but I don't know if you've noticed or not, but in 10 years of this church, I've never one time set out a church box for a church fund, ever. Never collected any money for the church. And there's a good reason for that. Because the church has zero expenses. What would be the purpose of me setting out a church box and all of us putting money in there and putting money in there and the money keeps building up and up in some envelope somewhere? For what? I mean, we literally have no expenses. So there's no purpose for that. And I don't want to do that. I don't want the big pile of money to be sitting there and then there's a need and then they'll say, okay, can we give to this need? And then the church has to vote on it or I have to consider whether we want to do that or not. That's just not a good idea. I'd rather, you know, you take that money that you would have put in the church box and just keep it to yourself. Keep it in your own God's money fund. And then when the need comes up and I say, hey, here's this need, like we've had when we helped out a member of another church that had a medical problem here a year or so ago. I put out a can for that and people gave to it as they wanted to. I put out a can every 2 months for the Oaks, right, to give them a donation, just as appreciation for letting us meet here. Again, you know, I don't put out a box every week and it builds up in some fund and then I give it to the Oaks. I just put out a box every couple of months. People put whatever they want into it out of their own Lord's money. And then that goes for that donation. I think that works just a lot better. We actually do have a church fund here. The only reason we have one is because we inherited it from the Minneapolis church. And the only reason the Minneapolis church had one is because it was set up before I ever got there. I never set a church box out in Minneapolis either. Not one time. There wasn't need for it. I paid for the church meeting room out of my own Lord's money. It wasn't very much, for the most part, it wasn't very much money, and it was just something that I could pay for out of my Lord's money. There was no reason for a church fund. And we had another church that disbanded of like faith, and they gave the Minneapolis church some money, and then that money ended up being given to us when the Minneapolis church disbanded. But anyway, that's the only reason there's any there. And honestly, I'd rather not have it. I hold on to it. I'd rather not have it, honestly. If there ever comes up a need, we can spend that money, and then we won't even have a church fund. There's no need for me to be hanging on to that. Now, it'd be different if we had a building, and we had building expenses, or we had a building where we were renting or something like that. Then, you know, I know there's other churches of like faith that do that. They've got two boxes. They've got a pastor box and a church box. And that's a good system. And people give to both, and then they pay for the church needs, the rent of the room or whatever. They pay for it out of that church fund. What I don't recommend doing is, I know of some churches that only have one fund, and it all gets put in there, and then the room gets paid for, and then the pastor takes what's left over. And I'm not doing that. I don't like that at all. Keep it separate. Let the church donate for the room and let the church give the pastor what they want. Keep those things separate. I do not like this idea of all one thing, and that's not a good idea in my opinion. And since I'm the steward, my opinion counts. And this, the ultimate decision on this one would be up to me. So this way, each person or each family is in control of their own God's money, and they can give it to godly causes as they see fit. When there is a need within the church, or in another church possibly, or even outside the church, which would scripturally qualify for our support, I bring it before the church, and anyone who chooses to can give towards it from their God's money. If a person doesn't think it's a valid cause, he doesn't have to give. And that's the beauty of the situation, right? So say I bring it up and I say, you know, brother so-and-so in another church broke his leg. I think we ought to take up a collection to help him out. And maybe some of you thinking, I know brother so-and-so, and that was a stupid thing that he did, and I don't think we should help him out at all. And then people start fighting about it. Well, I don't think we should. Well, I think we should. But that's not a good thing, right? But if I just say, hey, let's take up a collection for brother so-and-so, give if you want to. If you think, you know what, that guy's an idiot, I'm not giving him anything, don't give. Nobody's going to know, right? And the rest of you can give whatever you want. And then we send it off as a church, and we're all still unified. At least it looks like we are anyway, right? It's just a lot better system. A lot better system. This, like I just said, this limits disputes about what particular causes should be supported with God's money, as I call it, and what shouldn't be. On the other hand, and I probably already said this, but on the other hand, if all the church members gave their Lord's money to a church fund, and then out of it the pastor was paid, church needs were covered, and the poor were helped, then the church would collectively have to decide how much should be given to each thing, which could cause strife, because different people have different preferences and different ideas about things. Or even worse, the pastor just says, I'm going to make all the decisions and I'm going to decide where all this money goes. That's even worse, because then people are really going to be upset, and I wouldn't blame you. So that's why we do what we do. Using this method, each church member, each family decides how much of and to whom their Lord's money will be given, and they are accountable only to God for their decision. And I think that's just the best system. It makes sense. That's the system that I grew up under since I was converted. It's biblical. It's just a good way of doing things. I think you all knew that, pretty sure. But I don't know that I've actually ever gone through it and really preached it in a sermon. I know this information has been made known. But anyway, I wanted to go through and give some detail about it. All right, now let's talk about generosity. So this is going to be another category of giving. This is different than the Lord's money. And I personally think the most exciting and rewarding thing about making money for a Christian should be the opportunity to give generously to the Lord and to others. As Jesus said, and Paul quoted him in Acts 20 and verse 35, everybody probably knows this, at least this part of the verse, the last part. Paul says, I have showed you all things, how that so laboring ye ought to support the weak. See, Paul was laboring and working so that he could help other people. He wasn't just laboring and working so he could enjoy it all for himself. Let me just back up a verse. Let me back up a couple of verses. I have coveted no man's silver or gold or apparel. Yea, ye yourselves know that these hands have ministered unto my necessities and to them that were with me. Paul worked not only to provide for his own needs, but to help other people out as well. I have showed you all things, how that so laboring ye ought to support the weak and to remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. So yes, I truly believe the most exciting and rewarding thing about making money for a Christian should be the opportunity to give to the Lord and to others. And if that's not your motivation, and if that doesn't turn your crank, then you ought to check your heart. You ought to see, like, if you got a big fat raise and you're making really good money, more money than you ever have made, if that is exciting to you because you think, man, I have a lot of money that I can give now. I can give a lot more than I did in the past. That's the attitude to have. If you just go out there and earmark it all for all of your consumptive fun, And it's just never even a thought of, wow, I got a lot of money now that I could help other people out with. You need to check your heart, I think. It truly is more blessed to give than to receive. I think anybody that's done it has experienced that. And that's why it's important to never refuse a gift, because in so doing, you are depriving the giver, as well as yourself, of a blessing. Never refuse a gift. Some people have a problem with that. Some people have a problem receiving a gift. Some people are great givers, but they hate it when somebody gives to them. Well, you need to learn to be a giver and a receiver. Because guess what? Yes, it's more blessed to give than to receive. Maybe you like to give more than you like to receive. Afford the other guy that opportunity. Let it be a bigger blessing for him to give than to receive. There's a saying in the South I just heard recently, don't block a blessing. If somebody wants to bless you with something, if they want to give you a gift, let them do it. Even if the person's poor. Now, if the person has dementia or Alzheimer's or something like that, you know, that's another story. Obviously, you got some old lady that's just giving away, you know, her entire living and she's not going to be able to feed herself. Clearly, that's not what I'm talking about. But even if you have somebody that is relatively poor and they want to give you something, he or she wants to give you something, let them. Let them do it. I remember the story that Conrad told about an old lady. It wasn't to him. It was to another preacher, I think. Tried to give him a little bit of some offering. It was some small amount of money. And he refused. No, because she was poor. And she got mad and threw it down. And said, you deprived me of a blessing. So don't do that to somebody. Now, here's the thing. If we view our money as all belonging to God, then this becomes easy. You have to remember, when I said God's money is his and it's not mine, I mean, I guess that's a different level where that is like literally not mine. But if you start viewing all of your income, all of everything you have, as really ultimately belonging to God, if you view it that way, then giving becomes a lot more easy. Because it truly does all belong to God. Psalm 24 and verse 1. Psalm 24 and verse 1. And you better remember that. Whatever income you have, and the higher your income is, the more you ought to remember this. You remember that God gave that to you. God blessed you with that. And the moment you start thinking, getting up on your high horse, thinking, I got this income because I'm so smart, because I'm so educated, because I'm so whatever. You start thinking like that, and don't be surprised if God takes it away. You always thank God for that, and you, in your mind, you always tell yourself, I don't deserve any of this. This was a gift. God gave this to me. This was a blessing, and I take absolutely no credit for it, because even if I did work hard for it, guess what? God gave me the ability and the drive to work hard for it. It all is because of God, period. You need to have that attitude. Psalm 24 and verse 1. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. You see, it's all God's. He owns every bit of it. He created every bit of it. And any little piece of it that he gave to you, guess what? He still owns it. You know how it used to work in the old feudal system? You had the Lord, and that's what he was called, the Lord. And the Lord owned all the land. And then you had these, what the heck were they called? They weren't slaves. They were serfs. Thank you. You had these serfs that worked the land. And by working the land, they were entitled to 25% or something. I forget. They were entitled to something, some part of it. But the Lord got the rest. But ultimately, it was the Lord's land. It was the Lord's everything. And he just gave the serfs a little bit, you know, just because he felt like it. That's how it works. The Lord owns everything. He owns the earth and the fullness thereof. And he's just graciously giving you a little bit to enjoy. But it's all his. 1 Chronicles 29 and verse 11. When you start viewing it like this, it becomes a lot easier to give. 1 Chronicles 29, 11. Thine, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. For all that is in the heaven and in the earth is thine. Thine is the kingdom, O Lord, and thou art exalted as head above all. It's all God's. God owns it all. And when we give to God and to others, we're only giving back to God what he first gave to us. Let's read the next three verses. Both riches and honor come of thee, and thou reignest over all. And thine hand, in thine hand is power and might, and in thine hand is to make great and to give strength unto all. Now therefore, O God, we thank thee and praise thy glorious name, but who am I and what is my people that we should be able to offer so willingly after this sort? For all things come of thee, and of thine own have we given thee. What I was just saying for the last 5 minutes and preaching and all that, I basically just preached you that verse. That just says it. It all comes of God. And whatever we give, we're just giving back to God. I know this kind of irritates my wife, but she'll thank me if we go out to eat. Oh, thank you. Thank you for that. Or thank you for buying something. And I always tell her, I'm like, no, just thank the Lord. He's the one that gave it to us. She's like, well, I know, but still, you worked for it. Or what? I'm like, no, just thank the Lord because he's the one that gave it to us. Ramsey had this to say in his book, Dave Ramsey's Complete Guide to Money. I thought this was good. He made this point. It kind of got me a number of the thoughts in this series were Ramsey priming the pump and getting my mind going. Really glad I decided to read those books because I did this whole series. I put this all together. I hadn't read the books yet. I had them sitting on the shelf. I got them for just a few bucks at a used bookstore. And then I thought, I should probably read those books. I'm really glad that I did because I got a lot out of them. And this series probably ended up being, a few months longer because of that. So anyway, here's what he had to say. He said, it's always easier to give someone else's money away because we feel no attachment to it. Like I said, Congress does it all the time. You think it pains them one bit to spend another trillion of your money? Not a bit. They don't care. Why would they? The Bible says, quote, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. You know what that means? God is the owner. He owns it all. Not a tithe, not a love offering, not our leftovers. He owns it all. When we view our wealth like that, then suddenly giving becomes easy because we're not giving our money away at all. We're just asset managers for the Lord, doing what the owner, God, tells us to do with the money. And I thought that was really good. Asset managers, or stewards, in other words. That's why it's called stewardship. You take care of the money in God's stead. For God's, God's the owner, but you are in control of it. You manage it. he gave the example in the book, and I thought this was good. He said it was the first time he was able to write out a big check to some charitable organization. I don't know what it was. It was $100,000 or something, but it was a pretty good sized check. Might even been multiple hundreds of thousands. I don't think it was a million, but anyway, it was a lot of money. And he just instructed his accounts payable lady to write the check out to this organization and do it. And he's like, did that pain her one bit? And he's like, no. I mean, she's just writing out another check just like she would to, you know, to for taxes or for some new software system they were buying or whatever. She's just writing out a check. It doesn't matter who it's to or what amount it is. She's just doing her job, just doing what the master said, write out the check and mail it out. It didn't hurt her one bit to fork over $100,000 to a charitable organization. And that's the way that Ramsey explained it. That, yeah, why didn't it hurt her? Because it wasn't her money. She was just the steward. She was just the manager, right? So when you view it that way, you know, it becomes a lot easier to give. Now, being generous toward others is putting your wealth to good use. Matthew Henry, the famous commentator, said, or wrote, money is like manure, good for nothing if it be not spread. Napoleon Bonaparte, the famous emperor of France, said, riches do not consist in the possession of treasures, but in the use made of them. I thought that was pretty good. Riches do not consist in the possession of treasures, because what good is it if you just sit there and you look at it? I mean, what good? You may as well not have it. It's just as useful to you as not having it. But the true riches consist in the use made of them. H. Jackson Brown Jr., in one of my favorite little books, Life's Little Instruction Book, he said, don't admire people for their wealth, but for the creative and generous ways they put it to use. He also said, if you make a lot of money, put it to use helping others while you are living. That's wealth's greatest satisfaction. And I agree. I do agree with that. And then some unknown quantity named C.E. Wagner said, it's more important to make a difference than a fortune. I think that's true, too. If I didn't, I wouldn't have said it. What's that?
What's your middle name?
Edward. Now, here's another reason to be generous, because it encourages other people to be generous. And this kind of has dawned on me over the last few years. People oftentimes do not become givers until they are first given to. A lot of times children are not givers by nature. Some of them have that giving spirit, but a lot of children are not givers by nature. You know why? Because they've been takers their whole lives. All they've experienced their entire life is taking, 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 and they don't even think about giving, right? But when you become an adult and somebody gives to you when they don't have to give to you, when it's not owed to you, and, you know, because kids, I mean, that's just, you're supposed to, right? You're supposed to give them food, clothing, shelter, right? All that stuff. I mean, that's just how it's supposed to work. But when you become an adult and nobody owes you anything and somebody gives you something out of the kindness of their heart, just because they simply wanted to, all of a sudden, I think it changes you because you realize, like, wow, that really felt good. Like somebody thought about me enough to give to me. They thought about me when I was in a difficult situation, or they just wanted to be nice to me. You're like, wow, that really felt good. And then it makes you think, I want to do that too. Like, I want to do that to somebody else. Like, for instance, these are just some things that I thought about. Chances are, if you have not had a spouse or maybe a parent or something like that, or God forbid a child die, if you have not had that experience yet and you've never received a card with money in it that somebody sends to you to help out with the funeral expenses, chances are you may have never even crossed your mind that when somebody else's parent dies or somebody else's spouse dies, to send them a card and send the money in it to help out with funeral expenses. You may have never even thought about that until somebody did it for you. And then you realize, oh man, that was really nice of them. I really appreciate that. And I bet from that point on, every time somebody's close family member dies, that they would be on the hook for the funeral expenses anyway, like a spouse, I guarantee you after that time, you're going to send a letter, which you might not have even thought before that. You might not have even considered sending a note or a card, because some people just don't think about stuff like that. But you're going to send a card, and you're going to send money in it, because somebody did it for you. But if somebody wouldn't have done that for you, you probably would have might not have ever thought about it. That's why I say it's important to be generous to others, because it will spread like wildfire. You start being generous to others, they will want to start being generous to others. And it just makes the world a better place. Taking somebody out for dinner. If nobody ever took you out for dinner and paid for it out of the kindness of their heart, it may never cross your mind to do that for somebody else. So take somebody out for dinner and pay. It maybe would make him think, oh man, that's a nice thing to do. Or for instance, probably a lot of people, especially if you're young, you've never really had medical problems before. You may hear about other people having medical problems. Never think a thing about it. Like, oh yeah, he'll be all right, whatever. You know, insurance, or, you know, it's like in this country, we just think medical problems, and nobody even thinks about money because somebody else is paying for it, right? Nobody even considers it, right? But until all of a sudden something happens to you and you have some big medical bill that's not covered and somebody gives you money for it, you're like, man, that was nice. Wow, I'd have never even thought about that. Well, guess what's going to happen? The next time you find out about somebody else that has some medical need, you might be inclined to give him or her money for that, right? So generosity spreads. It spurs other people to do that. So don't let the chain of love end with you. If somebody's been generous to you, somebody's done something nice like that for you, don't let the chain of love end with you. There's an old country song. You may have heard it. This is probably more than 20 years, probably back when I was in college, maybe even high school. I don't remember. It's been a long time ago. Don't let the chain of love end with you. I won't sing it to you because I don't want you to throw me out of here and ask me to never come back. But it's the chorus, and I think he finds somebody really broke down on the side of the road, helps him out or something, and then I forget what the circumstances were. But the chorus goes, you don't owe me a thing, I've been there too, someone once helped me out just the way I'm helping you. You don't owe me, someone just helped me out the way I'm helping you. If you really want to pay me back, here's what to do, don't let the chain of love end with you. I thought that was pretty good. I like that song. Haven't heard it forever, but it just came into my mind as I was putting this outline together. Now, being generous not only gives one a feeling of gratification and satisfaction, but it also will increase one's wealth through the blessing of God. Now, again, this is not the reason to be generous. This is simply a fringe benefit of it, okay? You don't think, ah, you know what? Pastor told me to be generous. I'm going to start taking people out to eat. I'm going to start giving gifts. I'm going to start doing this because then my income's going to double. That is not the way you go about it. You just think, you know what? I just want to be generous, just sheerly because I want to do something nice and kind for somebody else. And then just sit back and, you know, don't be surprised if God somehow brings it back to you in spades. Let me give you some verses here. Proverbs 11 and verse 25. Proverbs 11 and verse 25. It says, the liberal soul shall be made fat. And no, that's not talking about Chris Christie. Okay, nobody got that. But Chris Christie, you know, the big fat guy, you know, governor of New Jersey, I think it was, you know, liberal Republican. This liberal's using a different sense here. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. Liberal means free in bestowing, bountiful, generous, open-hearted. And fat, as it's used here, this is the third primary definition, with reference to the amount or produce or supply, it means yielding or capable of yielding excellent and abundant returns, well supplied with what is needful or desirable of a person, as it is speaking of here, affluent, wealthy. So it's not talking about becoming obese. It's talking about becoming wealthy, becoming affluent. So if you put plug the definitions into the verse, in other words, the man who is free in bestowing gifts to others and is bountiful, generous, and open-hearted shall be well supplied for, affluent, and wealthy. Of course, human nature teaches us otherwise. If I'm generous to others and if I am giving, I'm going to have less. I'm not going to have more. But God says you're going to have more. Just, you're just going to have to determine if you actually believe what he said or not. Now, you might look at some people and think that, you know, maybe you look at a generous person and you say, well, that guy is generous because he's wealthy. He can afford to be generous because he's wealthy. But flip it around. Think about it the other way around. Maybe the guy is wealthy because he's generous. Maybe that's why he's wealthy. Maybe he didn't start becoming generous after he became wealthy. Maybe he got wealthy after he started becoming generous. Just maybe. Those who scatter their wealth to others will increase. Let's look at the previous verse, Proverbs 11:24. There is that scattereth and yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than his meat, but it tendeth to poverty. We'll get to that second part here later. There is that scattereth and yet increaseth. It's just like sowing the seed, right? You scatter that seed, and guess what? It grows more. You increase. He that gives to the poor will not lack, the Bible tells us. Proverbs 28:27. Proverbs 28:27. He that giveth unto the poor shall not lack, but he that hideth his eyes shall have many a curse. And he that sows bountifully shall reap bountifully. Remember 2 Corinthians 9:6-11? I'm just giving you the principle here that those who give, it'll be given back to them. And this includes not only the Lord's money, but just being generous in general to people in things that would be outside of the scope of the Lord's money. 2 Corinthians 9:6-11. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that ye always, having all sufficiency in all things, may abound to every good work. See, God says, you know what? You're generous. You give bountifully and not sparingly, and God will make all, it'll make it all abound to you. As it is written, he hath dispersed abroad, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness remaineth forever. Now he that ministereth seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food, and multiply your seed sown, and increase the fruits of your righteousness. See, God's the one that ministers the seed to the sower. You're the sower. God ministers the seed to it. And Paul says, he's going to multiply your seed sown. He's going to minister bread for your food. He's going to increase the fruits of your righteousness. You take the seed that he's given you, and you sow it, and you give generously, and guess what? He's going to provide more. Being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causeth through us thanksgiving to God. For the administration of this service not only supplieth the want of the saints, but is abundant also by many thanksgivings unto God. So not only does it supply for the want of the saints, but it also causes people to give thanks to God. Whiles by the experiment of this ministration, they glorify God for your professed subjection unto the gospel of Christ, and for your liberal distribution unto them and to all men. And unto all men. So, again, the context is given to the poor saints here. But your liberal distribution unto them, unto these poor saints in Jerusalem, and unto all men. See, this was a very giving people. And by their prayer for you, which long after you in the for the exceeding grace of God in you. Thanks be unto God for his unspeakable gift. Now let's go back to Proverbs 11 again. There's a number of verses here that teach this principle. Proverbs 11:25. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that watereth shall be watered also himself. You water, you get water. You give to people, guess what? It gets given back to you. The man that furnishes others with needful things when they need them will be treated the same way when he needs something. That's how it works. Remember Luke 6:38? You give to others in their time of need, and guess what? Others are going to give to you in your time of need. Luke 6:38. Love this verse. I've quoted at it several times in the last couple of weeks, but I'm going to actually read it this time. Luke 6:38. Jesus said, "Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with what measure ye meet it with all, it shall be measured to you again." It's going to be measured the same measure that you meet. You give generously, people give generously to you. And as a matter of fact, it sounds to me like it's going to come back even better than that. Because he said, it's going to be given to you good measure, pressed down, shaken together. Think about it like if you got a cup of flour or something, you know, you want to get the whole cup, you shake it there, right? And you get all the air bubbles out, and maybe you press it down or whatever. You know, pressed down, shaken together, running over, shall men give into your bosom. It's true. I've experienced it many times. We've already seen Proverbs 19:17, that he that gives unto the poor lends unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he pay him again. And even if you don't get paid back in this life, which you will, but just for some strange reason you don't, God will guarantee you that you're going to get paid back in the next life. Let's look at Luke 14 and verse 14. So if somehow you managed to be very generous and it never came back to you at all, well, you've got some treasure waiting for you in heaven. I can tell you that much. Luke 14:14. Jesus is talking about here when you make a dinner, you bid friends to the feast. He said, "Don't invite your friends, your kinsmen, your rich neighbors, because they can all invite you back." And you know, so you invite them. You know, you're going to get invited back. So you're just going to get back what you gave out. But he says, don't do that when you make a feast. There in verse 13, when thou makest the feast, call the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and thou shalt be blessed, for they cannot recompense thee, for thou shalt be recompensed at the resurrection of the just. So what happens when you help some poor person out that couldn't possibly ever repay it or give it back to you in kind? Well, the Lord will take care of it, and if not now, at the resurrection of the just. Ramsey had this to say in his Complete Guide to Money. He said, "If I clench my fist around that $1,000, none of it will leave. But at the same time, my hand's not open to receive any more. I've put up a wall that keeps my money from getting away and keeps more money from coming in." You ever notice that? If you've got your money, your hand clenched tightly around your money, and somebody else goes to hand you some, you ever try to pick something up with a clenched fist? You're not going to be able to pick it up, are you? You're not going to be able to accept it. But if you've got an open hand toward others, well, that open hand goes both ways. You can receive as well as give with it. Now, those who are greedy and do not give will end up losing what they have. Remember Proverbs 11:24. I told you we'd get to the second part of that. Proverbs 11:24. Second part. Now let's just read the whole thing. "There is that scattereth yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than is meet, or more than is suitable, but it tendeth to poverty." See, the miser thinks that he's going to get rich by being stingy. And God says, nope, you're going to get poor by being stingy. He just has his ways. God has his ways of making things work out. Let me give you an analogy. This might help to illustrate the point. This came from my own life. And when it happened, I thought, I'm going to use this as a sermon analogy someday. And it was in the bathroom, on the toilet, believe it or not. And my bidet was leaking at the handle. And it was irritating me. And so when I got the bidet, it didn't have the right O-ring in it for whatever reason. So I had to put a couple of O-rings in there myself. And I had to kind of bore them out and make them work and make them fit. And it worked for a while. And then it started leaking. So I got out the wrench and I tightened it up a little bit, and it didn't stop leaking. So I tightened it up a little more, and it started leaking worse. And I tightened it up more, and it leaked worse. And the more I tightened it, the worse and worse it leaked. Because what it was basically doing was smashing those rubber washers in there and deforming them all, right? So, okay, so I tore the whole thing apart. I cleaned off all the washers, put it all back together, and just snugly tightened it, and it didn't leak. And I looked upon it and received instruction. And I thought, if you clench your fist around money, it'll just go right through your fingers. And the harder you clench around it, the more it's going to go out of your fingers. Just like that bidet. The more I tightened that thing up, the more it leaked. When I loosened it back up and just barely tightened it, it didn't leak anymore. You keep your grip loose on your money, and you be willing to help out others when they're in need, and just be willing to be generous in general. Don't be surprised if your money quits flying out of your hands and the Lord starts filling up your barns. Now, I recommend creating a generosity fund. Remember how we looked at in the first part of this sermon, how that Christians ought to lay up money in store by themselves, right? 1 Corinthians 16, 1 through 2. And lay that up so you have that money there to give to the Lord's needs, right? I recommend doing the same kind of thing with a generosity fund. I recommend putting a certain amount or percentage of your income in a generosity fund each pay period, and then use that money to bless others with. Now, that is your money, right? The Lord's money is His. You don't touch that. That only goes to things that He specifically says that it goes to. But the generosity money is your money to use however you want. Now, for me personally, it doesn't get spent on me, okay? Now, it's not like I'm going to be struck dead if I spend it on me. It is my money. I could go off and spend it on myself if I wanted to. But that money is to be used for other people, okay? Now, maybe if you could end up being a benefit maybe of your generosity fund, maybe you want to take somebody out to eat and you just pay for the whole bill with your generosity fund. So, yeah, you were there. You got a meal out of it too. But, you know, you're blessing the people by taking them out to eat and by spending time together, right? You could have just given them money to go to the grocery store and buy some food and go home and eat it, right? But it wouldn't quite be the same, would it, right? So I'm not saying you could never benefit at all from your own generosity fund, right? If you take somebody out for a nice day and you take them out to an amusement park or something and you pay for the whole thing, you know, out of your generosity fund, you'd have some benefit there, but you've also benefited somebody else. So, I mean, the nitty-gritty and the minutiae of how you do it is up to you, right? I mean, this is not like, thus saith the Lord or anything. But this money should be set aside, you know, to be used to bless others, is what I'm suggesting, anyway. I know a Christian man, that when he started a business, he told himself, he purposed in his heart, that he was going to give 5% of his gross profit into a generosity, to be generous toward others. And he's already doing the 10% to the Lord and all that. I mean, that was a given. But he just decided, you know what? I want to be generous. If the Lord blesses this, I'm going to give 5% into this generosity fund to bless others with. And he didn't know what was going to happen, right? And then as the business started to grow, he's like, oh, this is cool, you know? Well, then as the business prospered and did well, then he realized 5% is actually a lot of money. I mean, if you know, just take your paycheck someday and look at your W-2 and multiply it by 0.05, and you're like, oh, that's quite a bit of money, right? But he purposed in his heart to do this, and he's going to stick with it, and it turned out to be a huge blessing. It's like, man, now I've got some money there every month in this account, and I've got to do something with it. And it now I go out looking. You know, this guy goes out and looks for people to bless, things to do, nice things to do for people, because it's there. It's set aside for that purpose. And it ended up being a huge blessing to him, and he had no idea what it was going to turn into in the long run. So I think it's a great idea. Like I said, the generosity fund is not for things you would use God's money for, like supporting the minister or the church or helping out the poor that are in genuine need. I mean, you could use it for that if you wanted to, I guess, in addition to your Lord's money, but that's not the purpose for it, right? It's for other things. Of course, I'm just making this up, I mean, I made this thing up, right? I mean, the whole idea of the generosity fund, like I'm not, so this is not like some, you know, I'm not giving you thus saith the Lord, so you can do whatever you want, but I'm just saying this is my idea anyway. The generosity fund is for things like doing nice things for others that you're under no obligation to do whatsoever, right? Like taking people out to eat or something like that. Or giving somebody a gift card to a restaurant, and he'd take him and his wife out to eat and go out and enjoy themselves or whatever. You know, something like that, right? You could use your generosity fund for that. Giving gifts to people, you know, whatever, if that's birthday or if that's just random, you just want to give somebody a gift just for fun. You're out somewhere and you see something, you're like, oh man, I know that he or she would love this thing. You just buy him a gift just out of nowhere for no reason whatsoever. You use your generosity fund for that. Or random acts of kindness, like leaving a big fat tip on the tab, just for fun, just for no reason whatsoever. The waitress did a nice job, she probably needs the money, and give a nice big fat tip, just for the fun of it. Just random act of kindness. Or this one, I think this is a good idea. I still want to do it, I just have never done it. Some guy did it to me years ago, I've never forgotten it. I was behind him in line at a coffee shop. I mean, this is like back in Ohio. And this guy pays for his meal, and he's like, or his coffee, he's like, and whatever this guy wants. I'm like, are you kidding me? Nope. He bought my coffee just for no reason whatsoever. I thought, man, that was so cool. I've always wanted to do that. I need to do that one of these days. But that's just an example. Or, you know, like I talked about the other day, you see people holding up the signs in Walmart, in the Walmart parking lot, and they're having a rough time, need to get home or whatever. You know, use your generosity fund for that. Or donating to GoFundMe campaigns. You know, you hear about somebody, something happened to somebody and some calamity, and you can donate, especially if it's local. It's always nice to do it local. But, you know, even if you hear about it, you're reading a news story somewhere, and you hear about some guy that has some problem or whatever, you donate to a GoFundMe. You can use your generosity fund to do that. Or supporting organizations that you believe in. Like, and now this doesn't have, this is, I'm not talking about giving to a church. I'm not talking about even Christian organizations. Like, for instance, maybe you love what the Babylon Bee does. I don't know if you know what the Babylon Bee is. Maybe you love what the Babylon Bee does. They are, in a comical, humorous, satirical way, are fighting against the deep state. And they're doing a great job. And it's great. If there's one thing that people like that hate, it's to be made fun of and shown how stupid they are. And the Babylon Bee does a great job of that. So maybe you're just like, you know what? I just love what the Babylon Bee is doing. Use your generosity fund. Donate to the Babylon Bee, just as an example. Or Make Americans Free Again. Or whatever, any organization, whatever organization you like. Maybe you want to donate to the local pound. What do they call it? I can't remember. Humane Society. There you go. Couldn't think of it. Whatever you want to do. You know, you don't use the Lord's money. I mean, goodness sakes. You don't donate to the Humane Society with the Lord's money. I mean, that's a good way to get killed, I think. But you can donate with your generosity fund if that's your thing or whatever. So having it, now here's the final point. Having a generosity fund will help people who are not naturally generous to be generous. And it will help those who are too generous from being irresponsible with their money. So there are some people out there that are just not naturally generous. It never crosses their mind. And if it does cross their mind, they think, nope, I gotta save. I need to prepare for my future. No, I can't do that. So if you take somebody who is not naturally generous, and there's plenty of us out there that are like that, set up a generosity fund. I'm going to put X percentage or X amount into this every single time I get paid. And guess what? It will force you to be generous because you're going to see that amount, that account building up, building up, building up. You're like, okay, I got to do something with it. And then you start thinking, oh, you know what? I could do this for that person. I could do this. I could donate to this or donate to that or whatever. So it will make people that are not naturally generous to be generous. And then if you are a generous person, which some people are very generous, some people are even too generous, generous to a fault, it will limit your spending. It'll make you to not be irresponsible with money. So you've got a certain amount in there, and you've given it all away, and there's nothing in the generosity fund. Stop giving, right? Stop giving. You've done enough. You've, you know, at this point, you probably ought to be putting money in your 401k. You probably ought to be doing something else, even though you're just itching to give to other people. And that's a wonderful spirit to have, but it'll put the kibosh on it so that you make sure you're being responsible with other things. And of course, it's up to you to determine how much is in your generosity fund. I mean, if you're a really generous person, you just love giving to other people, put 20% of your income in your generosity fund. I mean, if that's what you want to do and that makes you happy, go ahead. You know, that, there's nothing wrong with that. You can put whatever you want into it. And I would say, like, literally anybody can do this. I don't care how poor you are. You could put $5 a month in your generosity fund and go out there and just buy somebody a candy bar and hand it to them. And that'll make their day. I mean, you literally spent like $1.50 and made someone's day. So this doesn't have to be a huge amount of money. But I'd say, you know what? If the Lord has blessed you with a lot, freely you've received, freely give. I think that's the way to do it. But, you know, anybody, like I said, anybody can do it to one extent or the other. So that's all that I have to say about giving. And next time, we're going to look at spending. And I'm going to talk about the good part of spending and the bad part of spending. And we're going to be on that for a little while. So I thank you for your kind and patient attention this morning.